that he was the first black to attend Carleton, arriving in January of 1948.
The first, as we said, Negro was coming to Carleton.
Right, Negro in those days.
In those days, it was. And in fact, black was a pejorative term.
It was pejorative, sure. Somebody called me a black bastard. I thought about the adjective, not the noun.
That's right. Out of the clear, he said, I'm not going to room with any nigger. And as you and I were talking about...
You had never known of his racism.
Not at all.
Which had been latent.
It had never come
until
up.
Until presented with a reality.
A reality.
And it came out spontaneously.
Just spontaneous. It just shocked. I can't tell you how it shocked me.
Which means that he had been without experience, and he had been.
He had been.
With any kind of direct experience.
And what kind of prejudice did you find on the campus?
Well, Bob, I met no overt prejudice. There was unconscious racism, that is, the racism that stemmed from people who want to pat you on the head and make sure that everything is comfortable and nice. The people who were unduly concerned about what my social life was going to be. I remember the college dentist who expressed the wish that I would not feel too lonesome. Lonely on campus, and I said, how could I with 1,800 people? I knew what he meant, of course. And I think there was a Methodist minister in town in Northfield who sought me out and wanted to do some hand-holding and sort of feeling sorry for me. But I had no, as I say, no overt racism. I'm sure that there were people who were probably unhappy about my presence, but... I had learned by then not to let that kind of thing bother me, as long as it wasn't hurting me, it wasn't overt, and I felt a very warm welcome, as a matter of fact. I knew that for many people, I was a new experience, that is, a new first-hand experience for them. They'd never had any contact, but then you can't blame them. I mean, here they are from places like North Dakota, where, not that many people.
You didn't feel any problem with the faculty?
No. Not with the faculty at all. Nothing condescending, because nothing condescending, no animosity. Sam Strong and I, because the class I took from Sam Strong was on racism, and he had ideas that were sometimes a little bit different from mine, but there was no contest. It was simply an honest... exchange of differences, let's say.
I certainly could say your two roommates, being away from you and listening, I never heard anyone say anything negative about
on the campus.
On campus.
Right.
Now, we
I think Tom, remember Tom Prey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think Tom Prey, half jokingly, maybe half serious, had some expressions of racism. But there again, Tom Prey was very honest.
He was right
out there in the open. I knew where he stood, and I never felt animosity from Tom. He would sort of say, look, I don't like you guys. I said, well, that's all right, Tom. We can still get along,
I think it was more one of curiosity. Remember when the people would come to our room?
Oh, yeah, people would stop into the room, and they would ostensibly... he'd be looking for Bob or Steve, but I would catch them looking at me, and I remember the day that Ron Kurtz came, and he said, shortly after I got there, 2 days maybe or something, he said, is Bubsy here? Because we were in suites, and I guess I was in the main room where the desks were, and I said, no, but I'm Halsey, can I help you? Ron Kurtz. But I think people were coming by to take a close look.
They were, and they would talk to me and look at you.
That's right. It was very funny.
I have to bring up the one awful thing that you and Steve did occasionally when someone came in, obviously, to look at you, and Steve would say, try my shoes, boy, and you'd say, yes, boss, and yes, boss.
Oh, we'd put on this act.
and I finally told you, if you two guys do that one more time, I'm going to move out of this room.
Because some people believed it.
Yeah, they believed it.
More that I could see credulity on their faces, the more I turned it on, you know, with the real shuffle and the accent. Yes, sir, boss. Mama Shanda Otherwins.
Oh, I died a thousand deaths through those things.
But I think people eventually caught on to our humor.
Yeah.
And they caught on to the fact that you can play and have an honest exchange, all the while maintaining respect.
Now, what about any prejudice off campus in the community?
Off campus in the community, I didn't experience any. I had a little trepidation going down for my first haircut, because in those years, as you recall, I had hair. And hair, I knew it was going to be a problem in Northfield, Minnesota. What was I going to do? I was going to have to go into Minneapolis and find a Negro barber shop. And so I took it upon myself to go downtown to Northfield to the barber shop. The barber shop that had the bullet hole in it with a frame around the wall that had been fired by the James gang during the famous raid when Northfield defended itself.
Right.
And I asked the barber very quietly, I said, look, I'm not here to prove anything. I'm not here for any other reason than a haircut, but have you ever cut my kind of hair before? And he said, no, but I'm willing to give it a try. He said, it shouldn't present any problems. And I said, okay, if you're willing to give it a try, I said, I'll take the gamble.
I'll experiment.
I'll take the gamble on this experiment, perilous. And I did, and he managed it, and that's where I got my hair. Didn't have to go down too often, fortunately.
Yeah, we were sitting in the Ideal Cafe, and three or four young men were sitting in another booth and began to make disparaging remarks about this Negro, just loud enough so we could hear it. And as Alzie knows, I get mad about once every 10 years, but if I get mad, you don't want to be around.
That's right. That's a volcanic rage.
So I rose up, and Al got up right behind me. Couldn't do it now.
No.
But at my weight then, I was about 167 or something.
Playing weight, that's right.
He came up behind me and picked me up by my elbows and walked me out of the Ideal, whispering in my ear, if I can put up with this for 26 years, you can handle it for one night. I think I learned a lesson in that.
Yeah.
From the other side, I believe Carlton had decided it had never been, would never turn anyone down, but nobody ever applied.
No one ever applied, that's
and
right.
After World War II, I believe there was sort of a conscious decision to try to...
Sure, to open it up
to
a
open
little
it
bit.
Up so people would understand that it was open to minorities.
And yes, but it needed to have, and I have to flatter myself, it
somebody
needed to have
it.
The person who could take it. It was sort of like Jackie Robinson in 1947.
Yeah, right.
Branch Rickey told him, said, now look, Jackie, you're the first, and everybody's watching you, and some people are going to try to goad you. Be careful, because you've got to prove it this year that you can perform.
Unfortunately, you're representing the
You're representing, said, a lot of boys are waiting there who need a chance, and they're waiting behind you, but your conduct this season is going to have to be exemplary. And he said, you may have to take some insults.
Because the spikes are going to be up, too.
The spikes are going to be up. They're going to come at you. And I think it was Joe Garagiola who trotted out a black cat, brought a black cat out to home plate when Jackie came up to bat and said, ha-ha, Robinson, this is you. You know, but he had to take it all, you know.
Smile while
you know. But I felt that I had, and Bill Gallagher did too. No one was fearful. They felt that I had the ego strength. I'd been through enough experiences.
Well, between the war and being a Negro officer.
Never put in charge of white troops, incidentally.
Singing on the Broadway musical.
Singing in the Broadway. And
remember,
having,
you were in the Red Ball.
And having grown up in White Plains, so I and playing football and being in the choir in high school, working on the paper, so I felt at home, really, in both communities.